Welcome to the NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Gabriel Kolko. Gabriel is a leading historian, scholar, and activist, and he's Toronto's York University Distinguished Research Professor Emeritus. He's written many, many articles, 14 books, including The Age of War, The United States Confronts the World, Century of War, Politics, Conflicts, and Society Since 1914, and his newest that we talked about the last time he was on the program, World in Crisis, The End of the American Century. Gabriel, I welcome you. Oh, we're still working. Well, we gotta go a little ways to find him. Gabriel is a very distinguished historian, especially the very extensive accounts of war that he's written about. He wrote the definitive work on the Vietnam War, very, very long in detail. I've got a number of his books on my shelf that I've read over the years, and he's truly an important man discussing about the important issues of our time. Last time, one of the points he made in his newest book, The End of the American Century, subtitle, it really struck me that his view is the decline of this country began at the time of the Korean War. Now think about that. That was 1950 to 1953. So we're talking... Have you got him?
Yes.
Gabriel, oh, welcome.
She
welcome.
Me.
I gave you a rousing introduction.
I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you back. I'll refresh your memory a little bit. We have a few commercial breaks, one coming up at 4 minutes after the hour, then three more, but we have a lot of time to talk about issues. And you mentioned to me in an email when we got together in arranging this date that you look at the situation as being very complex, and I'm very eager to hear your views. It's not a pretty situation, and I certainly look at it all the time, and so do you. Let me let you begin with your thoughts, and after the break, first break, we'll come back and pick it up.
Okay, thank you. You want a break now?
Oh, no. When the music comes on in about 1 minute, we'll take a break. That's the cue that they're coming up to a break. So I will interrupt at that point. But let me let you begin briefly.
Well, as I told you before, I think the world is becoming increasingly complex. And with the demise of the Soviet communist menace, the United States has become far less focused on its real enemy. You know, the war in Afghanistan is now over 8 years old, and it began as a war against al-Qaeda, and now it's a war against the Taliban. And so to speak, the Pentagon is spending a tremendous amount of money, $700 billion in the next budget directly, almost $300 billion indirectly. But they're lashing out at an unknown enemy. And that enemy, of course, is an enemy of choice. There's Muslim fundamentalism, which the United States supported against the communists. And there are enemies all over. There's terrorists, etc. And the United States lacks, in the post-communist world, a focus.
Let me interrupt you, Gabriel. Please hold that thought and pick it up when we come back. And when we don't have enemies, we can easily invent them, as we do all the time. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? When he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-656-4806. 1-800-656-4806. Call now. 1-800-656-4806.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey kit includes a 1-quart high-quality stainless steel system complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug-out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product. Not available in Iowa.
Welcome back. I'm with Gabriel Polko, talking about wars that seem to go on forever, and when one abates, something else begins, but Gabriel, you made the point that the Afghan one has been going on for 8 years, and of course the Iraq one. I suspect it ebbs and flows, but we don't get too many reports over here about the daily car bombs that go off and the killings. The bad ones get reported, but if something happens that apparently the major media here don't feel merits their level of importance, they simply ignore it. But people are dying every day in Iraq, and of course Afghanistan is a raging war. And one more point also, we may do well on an open battlefield one-on-one against another armed force, but we don't do too well against guerrilla forces. But you're an expert on that, not me.
The United States has inherited, really, the outcome of the First World War, the settlements reached after the First World War and before the First World War, too, created Iraq and Afghanistan out of an arbitrary collection of tribes. Afghanistan is everything. It's Uzbek, it's Pashtun, it's Tajik, it's tribes of every sort in nature, and the same back. So in a sense, these are not countries. These are entities drawn arbitrarily, and of course they have a fantastic political problem, all based, of course, on nationalism. I mean, the Kurds are nationalists. And the Kurds exist in Iran, in Iraq, in Turkey, in Syria, etc. So that the United States is trying to patch up something which can't be patched up, and no amount of firepower, and the United States wins all of its battles, will solve the political problem. And the political problem is essentially that Iraq and Afghanistan are not really countries. They're they're entities, but they're not countries. Essentially, these are tribal societies. In this regard, the Undersecretary of State under Bush, Richard Armitage, gave an interview, and he said, look, our policy is amoral. We try to work with tribes, we try to buy people, we throw money around, but it simply doesn't work. He gave an interview at the end of last year, and essentially the United States is throwing money after lost causes. And Afghanistan and Iraq are militarily, certainly in Iraq, victories, but politically total failures.
It really is shocking, and the amount of money that we spend on this that is really draining us and piling up an unrepayable national debt, Gabriel, plus all of the other obligations that we have since the financial crisis, the economic crisis broke it in late 2007. Nobody
well,
really knew.
The net effect of that debt is that many countries are starting to go off the dollar as a reserve currency. They're looking for other kinds of currencies to buy. And this has made the European Union much more attractive. And countries are beginning to diversify. And, of course, economic power is no longer a monopoly of the United States, as it was after the Second World War. You have India and China, and China's coming along very, very quickly in a form of Leninist communism. Leninist capitalism, I should say. And India and Russia are developing, and Brazil are developing very quickly. And so what is happening after spending so much money on these futile wars is that the dollar is beginning to weaken, and China is becoming much stronger, relatively speaking, relative to the United States, and this is happening across the board. And it's counterproductive what the United States is doing militarily. It's not working politically, and it's not working economically. Economically, of course, the world is far more complex than it ever was. And we've just passed through the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and we're not out of it yet.
Well, I don't think we're out of it at all, and I have a number of programs with economists who really explain things honestly, and they paint a very, very dark picture of what they see coming up. Michael Hudson, for one, he talks about the issue of debt. He talks about the debt burden being so unmanageable, impossible to repay, and yet our solution seems to be to pile on incredible more amounts of debt that make it even more impossible to repay. I mean, there's got to be a bad ending to this somewhere, but nobody knows exactly when or how, but when it comes, it may be thunderous. By the way, the dollar in recent months has staged a rebound, I guess just like the stock market did through most of last year. One reason being because the European countries, Western European countries, are in an awful lot of trouble. So you've got the EU, Gabriel, and the euro, and you've got countries like Spain and Greece and Ireland, not to mention Eastern Europe, not part of the euro system. But, I mean, terrible, terrible problems. And so it's maybe the dollar temporarily is the best of the worst, but Asia seems to be the rising part of the world, China for sure, and India, and Brazil, of course, the major country in South America, and I can't imagine why these countries would not want to make a break. I guess they have to do it very carefully, but in some way make a break from the system we're under, the dollar and whatever. There really is a road to nowhere, and I guess very gingerly they try to become marginally more independent, and yet if they try to do it too much, they run into our ire, which means they can become a military target. Oh, it's a very nasty situation.
Well, it's complex, and I don't know what's going to happen next, but neither of the people who have the nominal power to control the situation. The World Bank, in any event, is extremely pessimistic, and they think that it's still a very dangerous situation. And, of course, the Bank for International Settlements of the World Bank, the IMF, warned well before the subprime crisis that a crisis was inevitable. The world economy has become far, far, far too complex, and no one, including the people in power, quite understand it. The new ways of accounting, there's a very good book by translated from French by a man named Véron, which shows that their ingenious systems of concealing losses and making profits. And in this context, the foreign policy running up debt is building towards a disaster. And where it ends, no one knows. It may be solved, but it may not be solved. And this is the dilemma that Obama has. In any event, the only consensus he can get from Congress is the consensus to spend more money on war rather than his domestic program, which, of course, is how he came to power. And under the circumstances, we live in an era of tremendous flux and rapid change. And while there are glooms on the horizon, there are also dangers which can't be calculated.
But it seems that there's no question that Obama came into office to continue the Bush administration policies. He certainly has done that. And now after an electoral defeat in the special election of Massachusetts, very ironic, I think, Gabriel, the idea that a no-name Republican who certainly is far to the right of center won the seat that Ted Kennedy held for half a century or so. Not that Kennedy was a shining example of the best liberal in Congress, but compared to most Republicans, he certainly was. He also supported
him.
Go ahead.
Yes, but functionally, Obama is pursuing essentially George Bush's foreign policy. I mean, he's escalating in Afghanistan. He's maintaining the war in Iraq. He wants to reduce troops in Iraq, but he wants to send them to Afghanistan, which is just a losing proposition. He's been warned by Zygmunt Bezinski, who was Carter's national security advisor, that the United States is going to go the way of the Soviets if they continue this. Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, says the United States presence will be required for another 15, 20 years. Well, it's simply not going to happen. No one will have another 15, 20 years. The history of American foreign policy isn't like that. In Korea, the Democrats were defeated in 1952 simply because Eisenhower promised peace, and he said he had a method. And Nixon, of course, defeated Johnson because he said he had a plan for victory in Vietnam. And under the circumstances, the United States is getting deeper and deeper into a quagmire. I hear music in the background. I think you want to...
Yeah, we need to take another break. We'll pick up on that as soon as we come back.
Men, are you thinking about the health of your prostate? Recently, New Vitality Health Products gave away thousands of free bottles of the supplement Beta Prostate. Due to incredible demand, they're giving away more free bottles of Beta Prostate to any new customers who call now. Beta Prostate is packed with plant sterols that support your prostate health. Remember, your prostate affects urine flow, sleeping habits, intimacy, and overall quality of life. Beta Prostate is so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same natural plant sterols as one Beta Prostate. And if you haven't tried Beta Prostate yet, you can call right now for a free bottle. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-790-6293. This offer is limited to one free bottle per household. Give your body nutrition that targets the prostate. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-790-6293. And be sure to click on our banner at www.republicbroadcasting.org.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Welcome back on with Gabriel Colco, discussing what I would call, Gabriel, this country's permanent war agenda. And it certainly, it doesn't matter whether we have a George Bush doing it or a Barack Obama. My God, we had a Lyndon Johnson and a Richard Nixon, and Reagan did it mostly with proxies, except for Grenada, I guess, entirely with proxies, Central America and other places. Clinton had his Yugoslavia war. I mean, it just goes on and on and on endlessly. Senior Bush, Noriega in Panama, and the Gulf War. And we have two more now under Obama. Obama has a new front in Yemen, and for that strategic part of the world and the waterways and so on. And now Haiti is an occupied country. 20,000 U.S. forces, paratroopers, Marines, naval vessels offshore. And I wrote a number of articles since the Haitian earthquake, Gabriel, and I learned one thing that really amazed me. I never knew it before, but Haiti is a potentially very rich country resource-wise, especially the most important resource, oil. And I guess where there's oil, there's always gas. But offshore, off the southern shore of Haiti, there is a potential treasure trove of oil. And apparently this has been known about for a long time, but when you don't need it, you keep it hush-hush. But why on earth would 20,000 of our forces be in Haiti, probably for an extended period? It certainly isn't because of the earthquake. It's got to be for another reason, and I would imagine it's to get as many of those Haitians out of the way so we can begin whatever we want to do to develop those resources.
Well, the Haitians can't leave and go to Florida, which many have tried to do. And the U.S. Coast Guard has a blockade up to keep the Haitians in Haiti. But let me change the subject a little to tell you, to discuss how complex the world is. You have the whole problem of intelligence. You have the National Security Agency, which spends more money than all the intelligence agencies put together, the CIA, and the whole intelligence apparatus. The NSA, and this is the subject of several books that have come out recently, Bamford and Abe, the NSA simply doesn't operate when it has an electrical shortage. When it has an electrical shortage, all of its computers and satellites and electrical listening equipment, and it gets millions and millions of calls every day, which just simply break down. And they simply don't know what to do. And many, of course, of these conversations are in foreign languages, and neither the NSA or the CIA have the personnel or the technique or the equipment to translate millions and millions of messages which arrive automatically in languages other than English, so that really the whole intelligence system doesn't work too well, if it works at all. But the other thing is that the CIA has some, and these are not very many, but they have some very able people who are very, very pessimistic about the long-range future of U.S. power. And the National Intelligence Council has been warning the entire Washington establishment that in the long run, the United States is just one country of many, and American power is limited. And, of course, no one is listening to the National Intelligence Council, even though their stuff is actually very, very good, very acute. They're interested in the limits of U.S. power, and those limits were shown in Korea, they were shown in Vietnam, and they're being shown now in Afghanistan and other places. And under the circumstances, the United States is quixotically trying to fight a fight which can't be fought by any nation, whether the United States or the Soviet Union or England or France or anybody. And I'm afraid they learn very slowly, and this is a serious, serious problem. But the American public is being alienated by the Afghan war. They're turning against it slowly but surely. And under the circumstances, given the fact that there are elections, it will probably be politically decisive for politicians to say, I'm against the wars that exist. And, of course, they would vote that way, and they'll be elected to office. And the same thing is likely to happen in this context of Afghanistan and Iraq and Yemen and Haiti, as happened with the Vietnam War. Eventually, the public will turn against it, and when that happens, of course, the politicians will follow suit.
There was a great deal of opposition two, 3 years ago. I forget the exact time frame, Gabriel, but at one point there was a lot of opposition, I think, when Iraq was particularly hot and Afghanistan was not as hot as it is now. But that subsided. I was very disappointed about that. Back, you remember, the 1960s and 70s, I mean, there was extreme opposition to the Vietnam War. And even in the military itself, of course, we had a draft back then. We have to take another break. But I think, you can speak to this. I think it got the military very worried that they just couldn't go on like this, so there could be a rebellion. Let's take a break. We'll come right back.
Okay. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hey, Republic Broadcasting. I'm Rob Gray, Executive Director of the American Open Currency Standard. Our team is hard at work here in Texas and across the country assembling the new economy, a system of trade built on honest money and American production. We're proud to report that we now have more than 26,000 merchants trading across the country and more than a dozen private silver currencies like the Lakota Nation and the John Gall. But the most stunning AOCS medallion by far is the new Andrew Jackson Anti-Banker, available right now at RepublicSilver.com. Log on to RepublicSilver.com and get your hands on the investment-grade 999 fine silver Andrew Jackson barter medallions and stretch your purchasing power in our extensive trade network. And be sure to stop by the AG Trading Post in Dallas, the only store that refuses FRNs where you can trade your Jacksons for top quality goods. Be a part of it today at RepublicSilver.com.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them. And what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. That yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect. And most of the other herbs in there, I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut. It's working on the liver. It's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back. I'm with Gabriel Coco talking about the war situation, the wars that America fosters, and the terrible problems that result from them. Gabriel, it seems that, they go on endlessly. Wasn't there a major problem during the Vietnam years, late 1960s, early 1970s, where the military was very worried just exactly whether they could hold everything together?
Well, there are people within the military and within Washington's establishment who are very alienated by the process. I would say there is not so much a process of radicalization, because these people are not radicals, but there is a process of alienation. And there are many, many generals who say the wars are counterproductive. The former head of intelligence in Afghanistan, Major General who was in charge of intelligence in Afghanistan, says the U.S. Record in Afghanistan is dismal. And that it's ignorant of local customs, and it's simply counterproductive. And under the circumstances, there are many, many people in Washington, many officials, who see this as a dead end, and they want to tailor policy to fit reality and American resources. And so there is a process now whereby many of these individuals are speaking out, and it's very, very useful. On the other hand, they don't have a real access to people of great power. And if you want to get ahead, you say whatever is necessary to get ahead, and you don't question the fundamentals of the system. But there are people who are very, very alienated now. And this is a new factor, perhaps more than during the Vietnam War. And during the Vietnam War, there were many, many officers who said, look, we're never going to Vietnamese the war. The Vietnamese army, the Saigon army, is basically corrupt. And many people are saying this now about Afghanistan. In the case of Afghanistan, most of the Afghan police force is illiterate. About one-fifth are drug addicts, and they're corrupt. And under the circumstances, they're not effective. And there are people now who are in official circles who are complaining about this. It's simply not going to work.
Here in I don't know how the European media is, Gabriel, but the major media here, these voices, these people that you talk about, and it's been a while, but I've quoted some military people, some generals or some admirals, people who diverge from the customary view that I guess everybody is supposed to take. These people never show up in the media here. So the little media monitoring I do, which I need to just to keep up on what they're doing, so I can see how outrageous it is, and a little media critique that I do from time to time, you still get voices going in one direction. You don't hear negative comments about Iraq or Afghanistan or any of the warlike activities this country engages in. My memory is foggy.
The only paper I read, actually, in paper form is the Financial Times of London. And the Financial Times is quite good. The top intelligence officer I'm referring to is a man named Michael Flynn, and he thinks that the Americans, in terms of Afghanistan are, what is, to quote him, clueless, dismal, etc. So the news coverage is not as bad as it could be. It's just that it has no great influence. Afghanistan is a losing proposition. It's been a losing proposition for 2,000 years, and anyone who's ever seen it says you have to be absolutely insane to go in to fight in that country, especially with high technology, because the only thing that can get around Afghanistan are mules and donkeys. And under the circumstances, there's probably more opposition now among the military than there's ever been. And many of them are speaking out. There's quite a group of them. The same is true of the CIA, of course. There are a lot of people in the CIA, but there was during the Vietnam War. Also, during the Vietnam War, they had a very, very acute insight into what was the problem and the limits of American power, and no one simply paid any attention then. The man who said, look, you're making a great big mistake about the size of the Viet Cong, they're much larger than you think so, was simply ignored. And, of course, he was eventually sued by Westmoreland, who was American commander-in-chief, for saying that Westmoreland covered the real statistics, which he did cover up. And, in fact, the case was settled out of court. Westmoreland never made his point. The fact is that no one likes bad news, and they're getting a lot of bad news, and they're getting it from fairly well-informed people.
In the mid-1960s.
So I,
One question, Gabriel. In the mid-1960s, didn't Defense Secretary Robert McNamara tell Lyndon Johnson that the Vietnam War was unwinnable? And yet it went on all those succeeding years. I think another important issue is that you don't necessarily want to fight all these wars to win them. You fight them to keep on fighting them because it's so profitable, not just for the defense industries, but for all of the related industries to defense. They make so much money, they simply don't want to stop fighting wars, and if something dies down, they want to crank up another one to make all this more money.
Well, that's a part of the picture, but only a part. The other factor is credibility. The United States doesn't like to lose wars, and one of the reasons they hung on as long as they did in Vietnam, because they weren't winning there, was credibility, and that can't be minimized. The United States, once it's in a war, doesn't like to lose it, because then they look like a weak power. And this factor of credibility was extremely important in Vietnam. And McNamara's actual role in Vietnam was very ambiguous. On the other hand, he also spent much more money on the war than he should have, and he helped Lyndon Johnson continue long after he knew better. His children, of course, were very different. He was very influenced by them, and that's part of the picture too. But under the circumstances, the United States has a losing proposition in Afghanistan. And although in military terms they won the war in Iraq, there's no question about it. In political terms, they'll be there for an indefinite period of time. And they'll probably be driven out because the majority of the people don't want them.
But I guess what can turn out even to be a military victory can turn out at some later time to be another defeat. We certainly haven't won a resounding victory since World War II. Korea, bad. Vietnam, bad. The Gulf War, well, it's hard even to call it a war. It just went on for a few weeks. But then we had the decade of the 90s and then another Iraq war, now the occupation. But the Iraqis are very upset that we're there. So the killing goes on. So I expect that could get a lot hotter at some point in the future. And Afghanistan may be the biggest mess of all. I mean, it's just the geography, the size and the geography of that place, Gabriel, makes it not exactly the most desirable country to want to fight a war in.
I've seen Afghanistan, and it's nothing but mountains. It's up and down. But the problem, of course, for the United States, apart from the fact that they sell equipment and the defense budget is a very important prop in the economy, is the fact there's a certain mentality. They don't like to lose wars, and once they get into a war, the question of credibility becomes very important. Now, the present defense strategy is that they want to fight two major wars simultaneously. They want to win two wars simultaneously, but they simply can't do so. They can't win one war, much less two. And under the circumstances, it's a losing proposition. Cuba, nominally communist, I don't know what it is, or North Korea, nominally communist, it certainly is. A Confucian society, if it's anything, are still communist, and under the circumstances, the United States is beating its head against a wall. And it's simply going to have to learn how to live like any other country, which is accept reality, because reality is not going to change. And it must, above all, accept the fact that people are nationalists. The Taliban was not originally America's enemy. America worked with the Taliban, gave them arms to fight the Soviet Union. But they aren't nationalist, and under the circumstances, they want foreign invaders out. not just Americans, but any foreign invader. I'm afraid the United States is trying to fight reality, and the reality of the world is it's far too complex for any one country to control, the United States included.
And at the same time, we maintain this enormous network of bases around the world, besides all the ones in the U.S., bases, nobody knows the exact number, but Chalmers Johnson thinks it may be around 1,000, and if I remember the number, 1,000 sounds like a reasonable number.
Plus, yes, that's a good estimate. There are bases all over, and every time you try to close one, you get an uproar in the local community because bases provide employment, they provide work, and they provide the local infrastructure, things to do. But that's simply the case all over. I mean, if you go to northern France, there are many French communities who live on bases, too. And one of the regrets that we encountered when we traveled there was that people complained that a base was closing down and this was affecting the local economy. But for the United States, it's more important because they do have so many bases, and the bases are extremely important political factor. And congressmen are often elected simply because they get money from the Pentagon for their constituency, and this is a factor also in keeping the Pentagon budget right up there. And it's now indirectly and directly approaching $1 trillion a year, and it's a stupendous amount of money because there are a lot of things you can do with $1 trillion.
Oh, they sure are. Well, we could simply give another trillion to the bankers, Gabriel. We've given them untold trillions up to now. A trillion here, a trillion there. Sooner or later, we're talking about real money. To paraphrase that old line that from the man, the senator you and I remember well. Seems to me I heard him say it a few times, Everett Dirksen, speaking about billions. Well, now it's trillions.
Prince.
Naomi
Prince.
Yes.
Has written a book, and she estimates the number of subventions of American banks by the American government to come to about $13 trillion. And that's a tremendous sum of money. A trillion is still a lot of money. And she estimates the handouts to the various banks. In various forms, they have repaid some of it, about $13 trillion.
Well, it's even worse than that. This man, Neil Barofsky, the man who is the administrator of the TARP program, which is only $700 billion, or at least nominally $700 billion, I've heard him say that we have pledged, how much they've gotten, maybe half this amount, but he said, we have pledged $23.7 trillion to these bankers. I mean, that's incomprehensible to me. And, of course, we know that the Federal Reserve, which, of course, is a private banking cartel, has handed out all kinds of amounts of money to their banking community. And they won't say how much. They won't say how much to whom. It's all secret. Apparently, there's some effort being made to get hold of their records or their emails or whatever, but they've resisted, and so far we don't have it. So who knows how much money the bankers have or how much more they'll be given if they simply ask for it.
Well, Hank Paulson, who one of the people in charge of this, has just published a memoir, which is very, very sensational. But the United States was confronted with a financial meltdown, and things could have been as bad as the Great Depression, and the state simply decided to step in, according to him, and save the banks from failing. The consequences of not doing so would have been so horrendous, because the financial system was coming apart a year ago, a year and a half ago. And one of the reasons come together lately is that they've gotten tremendous federal subsidies. Now, this is socialism for the rich, not for the poor. And that, of course, is not going to be politically popular. And Obama will have to face the fact that he's keeping the bankers afloat at a time that he doesn't have a consensus to pass his health insurance bill or do all the things he promised.
Indeed, so, and of course, Paulson, former Goldman Sachs, Treasury Secretary under Bush, and of course, he's speaking as a banker, Gabriel. He's not speaking as one of us. Anyway, we'll take another break. Another break, and we'll come back, and I'll let you finish up.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Final segment with Gabriel Kolko. Gabriel, other economists on this, I guess, on this program have said, indeed, as you said, we had a major, major economic problem. Their view is that we haven't really solved that problem. We have simply tucked it under the rug and pushed back likely an even greater one down the line because of the policies that have been adopted. And a much sounder one, at least on an interim basis, would have been to take these insolvent banks and nationalize them instead of handing over all these trillions of dollars to them. And they haven't used those trillions of dollars to improve the economy. They've used them to speculate and work on the next bubble. Credit has been contracting continually, since this began, because they will not lend. So they haven't exactly found the winning formula to get the economy back on an even keel. And the conclusion of these people who come on my program are, there is a serious day of reckoning ahead, and it's going to be pretty ugly when it arrives.
Well, there are a lot of people who are extremely well-informed who are terribly worried. And the most important, of course, are around the IMF and the World Bank and large, fairly respectable organizations. Not just radicals are worried, but anyone who is knowledgeable. The problem is that you have such a complex financial system. It's so interlocked in certain ways that anything that goes wrong has large manifestations. And the subprime contract began with $20-30 billion in subprime, and it ended up affecting trillions. And the element of confidence is very, very important. And when people lose that element, then the economy goes, well, belly up. It happened before, and it's likely to happen again. In any event, the economy is so complex, it's so convoluted that no one quite understands it. Now, that's not a serious problem for you or me, but it is a serious problem for the people who run things, and they don't quite understand it either. People like Paulson try to work around the edges and Geithner, et cetera, but it simply is not likely to succeed anymore in the future than it has in the past. The economy is becoming much more complex than ever, and that's a problem that they confront, and it's a problem, of course, that the average person runs to. Unemployment is going up in the United States. And things are simply not working the way they should. So while we seem to be out of the woods a bit, the fact is that it could all become very, very negative again and defeat the rosiness which now is starting to reappear of the system. It's not rosy at all. It's complex. It's much too complex for security. People simply don't know what's going to happen. It might be optimistic. Things might work out, but they might not. And if they don't, then it has untold consequences because it's far more serious. There are many more players in the field. There are now the sovereign wealth funds, Russia and the gas producers, there's China, et cetera, et cetera. And under the circumstances...
I'm going to cut you off, Gabriel. That music means they're going to cut me off, so I need to say thank you to you. It's been a wonderful hour. It's a big story. It never ends, and I wish we could continue it. Hopefully we'll be able to. My great thanks, Gabriel, for coming on.
Thank you.
And join us again tomorrow.
Introducing the new Go.